The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
You are listening to the one and only Bastards of Boston Baseball. I am Terry Cushman, joined tonight by Jeremy Schilling, Chris Felico, and we've got some projections to talk about. The Red Sox and the Blue Jays are expected, according to Zips, to be tied at 90 wins. Atop the American League East. There would have to, if that were to actually happen, of course, there would be tiebreakers and whatnot. Start with Chris. 90 sound legit?
Or can I ask a question first, Terry?
Oh, absolutely.
What group of nerds got together and created the Zips thing? Because I'd never heard of it before. Do you know?
It's been around for a while. I forget what the other one is. It starts with a P. Is it Acosta or something? I don't know. I don't put a ton of stock into him, obviously.
Okay, but, yeah, I'm in. All right, but, sorry, let's go.
Yeah.
I don't know what's more shocking. I mean, the 90 wins seems somewhat plausible. I just don't understand how they have us at 90 and then the Blue Jays playing in the same space and then the Yankees below us. If we finished with 90, I mean, I think that would be a relatively good season for us. But I would say then if we're projected for 90, the Yankees should be projected for almost 95 in that world and the Blue Jays 97. So again, I don't know how the hell they came up with this math. And ain't mathin' for me though.
So one is I don't have them at 90 wins. If we had like Dombrowski as our general manager, somebody that's going to improve the team, in late July, I would say that we would eventually get to 90 wins with whatever's added at the deadline, but that's not what this team is going to do. Breslow is completely inept. I do think this team's going to win 87, 88 games. I think they come in just under it. The only thing, like you guys, I don't understand what the formula is, and maybe tomorrow I'll have some time to look into it, but maybe the explanation lies in the placement and value on pitching. Because the Sox pitching, we have top-end pitching, we have depth, we have some young guys that we really don't know how to project, and I don't know what the formula is to say what Connelly Early is going to do and Tolley is going to do, but I think with Crochet, Suarez, and Bale still on the club, I really don't know what we're going to get out of Sonny Gray. There's just, and by the way, if you have a guy who's struggling or gets hurt, it's next guy up. There's 7, 8 guys in the system that are going to be ready to start. So I would assume this Zips formula puts a lot of, importance on pitching because simultaneously they say that we're not going to have anybody hit 20 home runs, but then they're going to project us for 90 wins. So I don't, you know, and I also don't love these formulas and these like AI things that, you know, just take metrics and don't account for Abreu hasn't been healthy. Story, we already talked about that. Cassis probably won't even start at the big league club. Injury concerns all over the place. And then they trade for a third baseman from Milwaukee. And I don't know how you know what he's going to be. So like Terry said, I don't place a ton of stock on it. And I think this seems a little high.
So I guess the puzzling thing to me is why do they think we're going to beat the Orioles and the Yankees? I mean, the Yankees are getting Gerrit Cole back at face value. That's should be, you know, a strong addition over what they had last year. You're going to have a full season of Cam Schlittler. Rodon has been solid for the last 2 or 3 years. They've got Bellinger back. They've got Aaron Judge. I mean, they've got a pretty potent lineup. They're very well balanced, and quite frankly, they know how to do it every year. The Red Sox are only doing it every third or fourth year. So I just don't trust that we're going to beat the Yankees. The Orioles got stronger today. They added Chris Bassitt, who's probably a three or four at best, but a solid guy that's going to give them a chance to win every time out. They did sign Zach Eflin earlier in the year. I'm not thrilled with that, but but they did add Pete Alonso, and they probably have the best all around lineup from first to ninth in the order, I would say. And I just think this team, this Red Sox team, is going to be a circus this year. And I think it's going to get in its own way. I'm not going to sit here and say we're below a 500 team, because we've got probably the first or second best rotation in the division, I would say, depending on health and all that.
In the American League.
And very possibly, you're right. Yeah. I mean, that whole central division looks like ass. And, you know, you've got the Mariners, that'll probably be pretty good. I don't know if Houston bounces back. I mean, they haven't really overhauled anything. It would help if they had their DH there, Yordan Alvarez, for a full healthy season, which they haven't. So I just, 90 sounds high. I don't think we get there. And I'm a little bit more worried about the bullpen than most people. I mean, we haven't really done much with it.
Yeah, that's a fair point. So, Terry, where do you have them if you have to pick an over-under on the win total? What's your line?
Gun to my head right now, I'd probably put them in the 83 to 85 window.
So just missing the playoffs?
Yeah. If they align the stars, let's say the kid we just got, Caleb Durbin, is a spark plug, hits for a little bit more power. Breslow spoke today that he thinks there's more power in there. So we'll see. You know, and then you get some contributions. Let's say Story is about what he was last year. You get a full season of Anthony. I'd say, yeah, you could maybe you're an 87 to 90 win team, but I don't know. I'm not comfortable with it.
I put him at 87 wins in the last wild card spot, third in the AL East behind Toronto and the Yankees. I did hear a funny stat, because they were talking, I think it was 98.5, but they were talking about, after Breslow made the statement about, we have seen him projecting to hit a few more home runs in this ballpark. Well, somebody went and put his home runs into Fenway Park, and only four of them would have been home runs. So the fact check there, and maybe this guy made it up, I don't know, but the fact check, if accurate, is like just completely the opposite. So line drive guy that doesn't hit the ball in the air as much. And so maybe Fenway takes away home runs and gives him some doubles and long singles. So, you know, it's Breslow. I can't listen to it. It's all lies. It's all just shoveling to the part of the fan base that's going to listen to it, retweet it as gospel, and not question what they're actually doing and how it applies to this roster.
Here's the Orioles lineup here real quick before Chris gives his take. And I've got Toronto's too real quick. So they got, this is the Orioles, Taylor Ward, who they just got from the Angels, Jordan Westberg, Gunnar Henderson, Pete Alonso, Adley Rutschman in the fifth spot, Dylan Beavers, Colton Cowser, Blaze Alexander, and Samuel Basalo. And Basalo is supposed to be a stud catcher. They have him as the DH right now, because obviously Rutschman is the catcher. Maybe they'll just kind of platoon both of those positions for days off. But that is a really potent lineup. And man, I wish we could have had a crack at Taylor Ward, because that would have, he would have been a 1-year rental, but that would have been a
great second base for them.
Second base is Blaze Alexander, who I don't know much about. He might have been a rookie last year.
Did they move on from, is it Holiday?
Actually, that's a great point. He's not listed in here. And obviously, he didn't trade him. They're not showing him on the bench either. So, yeah, wow. This is on FanGraphs too.
This so is a you former would... top prospect.
Yeah, I can look into that in a minute. Okay. Let's see their rotation real quick. Let's see, is that the? Yeah, so Trevor Rogers, I thought he was, I'm getting my Rogers mixed up. Yeah, so Trevor Rogers, Kyle Bradish, Chris Bassett, Shane Baz, who they got from Tampa, and we'll see if they can do something with him. Zach Eflin and Dean Kramer. So that's a lot of number threes. So if they're going to have an Achilles heel, perhaps it is going to be the lineup.
Yeah, and that's why I would have them, the Baltimore below the Red Sox. That rotation does not overly concern me.
Yeah, it's a lot of number threes and fours, so we'll see. Shane Baz is interesting to see if they can kind of get him over the hump in terms of health and production. The Diamondbacks really wanted him, but apparently Baltimore was willing to give a better trade package. Toronto, real quick here. So this is their lineup, top to bottom. George Springer, Nathan Lucas, Vladimir Guerrero, Addison Barger, who had a major breakout this past year, Alejandro Kirk, Dalton Varsho, Kazuma Okamoto, who we were tied to over the winter. He'll play third base for them. Ernie Clement, who was an absolute spark plug this past season, and then Andrés Giménez is in their lineup. I wouldn't say that's an extremely potent lineup, but it will be a productive one. A lot of guys in that lineup that can keep the ball moving. Their rotation actually looks really good as well. Kevin Gausman, Dylan Cease, Trey Savage, who had a Connolly Early type presence late in the season for them. Jose Berríos, and then Cody Ponce, who had like a 15 or 16 strikeout per nine in the Korean leagues the last couple of years, got like a 3-year deal from them. So we'll see what he ends up bringing. And yeah. So anyway, I mean, those are two teams with balance, I feel like.
Yeah. I mean, you could make the argument that Toronto maybe took a little bit of a step backwards as far as pitching. And you can definitely make the argument that the Yankees are better, right? Because they're adding Gerrit Cole. I mean, they're essentially running it back and then adding Cy Young Award winner or previous Cy Young Award winner. I don't see how they're going to be a worse team. As far as the Sox, I mean, if all goes well, I've probably got them somewhere between 85 and 87 wins. For the life of me, I don't understand how I didn't even recognize this great call that Jeremy made is that the same people that are saying we're going to win 90 are also saying that they're projecting no one to hit 20 plus home runs on the Red Sox, which is just, it doesn't make any sense. So what I'd be interested in is how, like, what was the construction of the everyday roster and the percentage of splits? And then also what do they have our actual rotation looking like to get to that 90 wins? Cause I just don't see it. Even if everyone stays healthy. You know, the only thing I could think about is in reflecting on, because I mean, we are essentially the same powerless lineup post Devers. Because let's face it, after Devers was gone, we really didn't have Bregman. We still have Story, who was the quote unquote power, and we haven't added anything since. And like I said, Bregman didn't add much even after Devers was gone. Is what did we go 52, I think, in 37 in Devers' absence down the stretch? I think we were 37 and 36 the day he got traded. So I don't know if these guys, and even if Craig Breslow's mindset is that, okay, somehow this is sustainable where you could do the 52 wins and 37 and try and replicate it over 162 game season. And maybe that's the case. Maybe you can win 90 games in the MLB feasting off of, you know, a schedule where you're going to play bad teams. But again, this team is going to, if it gets to the playoffs, they're going to have to face teams like the Yankees, like Toronto, like the Mariners. And there's no way they're going to be able to out-hit these teams. It's not going to happen. I mean, we even saw it in the regular season when they played teams with good pitching. they struggle to score runs, and I don't see this team scoring runs. Run prevention is obviously the main focus and good defense, but I mean, that's only going to take you so far.
Real quick, so Jackson Holliday has a broken hamate bone, which is in your hand somewhere. So he's going to miss, maybe he will miss about 6 weeks. And then, so I don't know if that puts him on track for opening day or if he'll need extended spring training, but perhaps that's why Fangraphs doesn't have him in their projected lineup.
So before you move on, guys, and I know what Gerrit Cole's been, can we not just go on the assumption that he's going to come back and be 31-year-old Gerrit Cole coming off Tommy John at age 35? Like, I think he'll give them a spark and he's going to be a plus in the rotation. But do you guys expect him to come back and be an ace again? And if so, do you think it's going to happen right away, or he's going to have to ramp up his innings and he may not be that player, if at all, until late July, August, when he's fully healthy? I mean, I'm not making the assumption that Gerrit Cole we all remember is coming back.
I kind of look at him like a Justin Verlander type guy. You know, he's a generational talent, you know, one of the best pitchers of the last, you know, two decades. I don't know where I'd rank him, but no worse than, you know, probably the top 10. At face value, I'll just assume he's going to be effective. Verlander won, I think, two Cy Youngs after his Tommy John, for instance.
That's a crazy anomaly.
He might be the greatest pitcher in the last, probably since Nolan Ryan. But
I would agree with you, Jeremy, as far as the not expecting to just come out and be the pitcher that he once was. I just look at it from what they could have added outside of trading for a top line pitcher, going after one of the big free agents, which, I mean, this was kind of a weak free agent class, if we're all being honest. I mean, when you really look at it from the free agency standpoint, we kind of got the prize or one of the prizes with Ranger Suarez.
Yeah.
You know, most of the major acquisitions came via trade as far as on the pitching front this offseason. I just think he's better than the alternative. And I think that their rotation with him in it, even if it's 65-75%, is better than the alternative, especially now adding Cam Schlittler, if he's even able to replicate 70% of what he did in the playoffs. But I would agree with you. I don't think it's a surefire he's going to come back and be remotely close to Cy Young, Gerrit Cole. But I also don't think he needs to with that lineup. And again, if I'm going to make the argument that the Sox are going to be able to scrape away wins, you know, feasting off bad teams in the regular season, I mean, I would imagine the Yankees, it's going to be that much easier for them because they're going to be able to take teams out of the ballpark on a night in and night out basis.
If he can throw 94, 95 and then has a slider and then one more pitch, change up, whatever, I think he'll be okay. They'll probably have to manage his load a little bit. I also didn't mention Max Fried earlier, you know, and if he's healthy, he's obviously going to give them, you know, a good chance to win every fifth day. So I try to count the Yankees out, but it just, they're automatically 87 to 90 wins, it feels like. And another thing too, I saw this somewhere, I think it was on Milliken's feed. Apparently IKF mentioned to the Red Sox media that when he was in the postseason last year with the Blue Jays, they were waiting for the winner of the Red Sox Yankees. And apparently they would rather face the Yankees. They just thought it was a safer matchup for them. I don't know what they based that on. That sounds insane to me, but they felt that the Yankees were the better matchup. So Aaron Boone was asked, you know, when he was meeting with reporters, how do you feel about your ex-player saying that the Red Sox were more dangerous than you? And you could kind of see, he did say, like, well, I'd be surprised if IKF said that, but, and then he went on his take about it, and you could tell he was a little peeved. You know, my take would have been like, listen, you know, we have to be the best team by the end of the year, and if we're not, we're not. That's how I answer it if I'm Aaron Boone, but he did seem a little peeved by the question.
I don't assume it's true. That could be a little bit of the player – you know, coming to the fan base. Same thing Sonny Gray did when he said he wanted to pitch here and the Yankee Stadium wasn't, being a Yankee wasn't for him or something like that. Then he goes back to the old press conference and it was the exact opposite. These players are adept at saying what they think the fan base wants to hear. And I kind of put this into that category. I'm not saying he's lying. I don't assume it to be true. Saying that it's not something these athletes typically do, in my opinion, but you know, if that's real, I mean, they would have beat both teams. So I don't know that it would have fundamentally changed anything.
Yeah. They were the best team in the American League.
Yeah.
But you know what? I mean, we both went 5-8 against the Blue Jays in the regular season last year, the Yankees and Red Sox. I think the difference was down the stretch. We had a late season series against them when things still mattered and they were trying to lock up the division. And I believe we actually won that series. And then ultimately they ended up beating the Yankees to clinch the division. And then they ended up beating them in the playoffs. So maybe that played a role in it, but it could just be IKF trying to basically appease Red Sox fans and get on our good graces, because it's pretty apparent that we're all disappointed that we handed him $6 million. And I'm sure he's aware of that. It's also funny, your point too, Terry, as far as with the reaction of Boone, he almost seemed miffed in the sense where he wanted to say, like, he couldn't believe that IKF would say that. Not because he couldn't believe it. It's like, of all players, like, who gives a crap what IKF says? Like, the guy sucks. Like, he was nothing when he was on the Yankees, let alone the Toronto Blue Jays. So I don't know. I mean,
it's also meaningless, because if he doesn't hit and he doesn't field at a high level, he's going to get crucified. So not to mention, I'm a little bit curious as to where his at-bats are going to come from.
I mentioned on the other show, I think Chris was on with us, where are Meyer's bats going to come from? You know,
I told you in the war room that there's Maz on 98.5 came out and said he doesn't think it's a guarantee that he starts in Boston, which was crazy to me. But then I started thinking about it and it's like, well, injury history, didn't finish last year, hit about what, 220 something, not great on base. Possible.
He was being platooned.
And he's not agreeing to a contract. You know, and the Red Sox did this last year. They promoted Campbell and they kept Roman Anthony and the others down because they didn't sign a contract. So maybe this is another message from Johnny Boy Henry saying, well, you don't want to sign our contract. All right, we'll go play in Worcester for a couple months.
I would not sign him to a contract.
I wouldn't either. Red flags.
I'd rather just be wrong about it and get 6 productive years out of him and then figure it out if it's going to go.
Not with the injury history. You can't do it with that player. I'm just speculating. I don't know that. It's just a guess. Like and maybe that's not a factor at all, but we saw it happen last year. So I gotta consider that it's a possibility if they want to extend him.
Yeah, I would agree with the sentiment of obviously not re-signing him, or signing him to an extension from the Red Sox perspective. But if that's the stance that we're taking, that's really why they're not doing it, or why they're going to quote unquote somewhat punish him. It makes it even that much more of a head scratcher. Like, why were you so resistant to trading him if that was going to be the difference between getting Ketel Marte, Marcelo Meyer, and you're like, nope, not going to trade him. Also, he's in the doghouse because he won't sign an extension. We're just going to stick him in Worcester. Like, you can't live in both those realities if you're Craig Breslow. Makes no sense.
I was going to mention this separately, but I haven't had a chance to read the article, but Chris Cotillo posted something about, could Connelly Early and Peyton Tolley be, you know, this year's extension candidates? And having gotten burnt on Rafaela, having gotten burnt so far on Campbell with their extensions, I want to see a full year of these guys first. Like, I get why teams want to do it early, but I think teams after 1 year, and even possibly after 2 years in a lot of cases, still have a ton of leverage over the player. It feels kind of reckless.
Especially pitchers with the propensity to break down.
Yeah, exactly.
I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, the only pitcher they've really done that with is Crochet. Well, they did it with Bayo, but Bayo had pitched a year plus.
He pitched at least a couple, so I think.
I agree with you, Terry, and I also think that the organization does as well. So I'm not really worried about that.
And the Bayo deal wasn't bad. I mean, we'd seen enough at the time, and I think we're all resigned to he's never going to be a number one or number two, but it's still a sustainable contract.
His contract is not that of a number one. It's a very reasonable contract. The disappointment is the fact that we were all sold that he was going to be the next Pedro, but I mean, we're not paying him like he's the next Pedro. So it's all fair.
I also think that if he's on the roster to start the season, and I don't think that's a guarantee, but if he is, I can imagine a scenario with Crochet, with Sonny Gray, with Suarez, where he's the four or the five, where the pressure can be off him a little bit. And maybe you get a little bit more out of him with less required. Remember, 2 years ago, he started opening day. He had all the pressure on him in the world. It's going to be the opposite this year. And I want to see with his mindset and his personality, if that gets to the point where now we're actually getting the best out of him by taking the pressure off.
So, Jeremy, when you say not on the roster, like, you still think there's a possibility Bayo gets traded?
Yeah, I don't rule out another trade happening. I first of all don't think it will happen. Okay. But if, for example, someone gets hurt that they're expecting to play every day, that's a guy that you would potentially have value in to go replace somebody. You know, if somebody goes down with like Cassis, who's not even going to be ready, but let's say somebody blows out a knee, and I'm not rooting for this, and I'm not even going to mention any specific names, but it's silly to not have an understanding of where you can go to fill that need if something does happen. So if somebody does go down, it's not a quick injury. He's a player that you could go package him and plug a hole so you don't lose a season over not having a key guy. That's what I mean by that.
Okay, that's fair. I mean, you could even make the opposite argument. You could even say another team's number two, number three pitcher goes down with Tommy John or an injury, and with the luxury that we
have, all of a sudden they're willing to overpay for him.
Right. Yeah. You could see that too. It's a good point.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, I hope he pitches well right out of the chute in Fort Myers for that reason, whether he's pitching for you or not, at least increases value. And, you know,
just think of the trade package return you could get if you put Bayo and Duran together. Like, you should get a pretty decent player back, you know, someone from another team surplus. And just today I shared this in the war room. Dave Dombrowski, apparently, or someone from the Phillies, I'm just assuming it was Dombrowski, told Nick Castellanos, don't bother reporting to camp. And I'm like, what a boss move by Dave Dombrowski. And if you remember, towards the end of the 2015 season, he got hired in August, right after the trade deadline. So he had a couple months left in the season. He just sent Hanley Ramirez home. He's like, dude, just get out of here. We'll figure it out this winter. And then he became a first baseman. And I was pleasantly surprised at how good he was at first base. But I just love that. And just imagine what a Dombrowski type guy would do to fix this roster. Just to clean it up, do a little bit of housekeeping, address one or two needs. And, you know, so, but there was someone that did post something that said, you know, there could be some uncharacteristic trades from teams in spring training because of the way the free agent market behaved this winter. It was slow and kind of volatile, you know, unpredictable. Who did the Dodgers get? They got Tucker, right? And yeah, they weren't really in on him. They just let the other teams mess around, and then at the last second they came dive bombing in with the best offer, you know. And so, you know, a couple of teams missed out on him. And so I don't know. I think something unforeseen could happen in spring training, more so than other years. I, as a Red Sox fan, you're so used to it because you're never satisfied with an aspect of your team. Like, this is going back a ways, but I wanted Cole Hamill so bad going into that 2015 season. There were a lot of rumors. The Phillies wanted Swihart, as part of that deal. And then I think they wanted one of Devers and Betts. You know, and I don't know how that would have worked out. Hamels was still very good for another 3 or 4 years beyond that. So our rotation would have been a lot more solid. But, you know, we'll see how it goes. The other thing, too, I mean, I think we kind of touched on it a little bit, but according to Zips, we do not have a 20 home run hitter on this team. I think we do have one or two. I think Roman Anthony will probably hit more than 20. Trevor Story, as you guys pointed out pre-show, hit 25 last year. And I think Abreu has hit at least 20 or more the last couple years.
Contreras? So
he could as well. Yeah, absolutely. I think he's typically a 15 to 20 guy, but I just think Fenway Park could end up suiting him a little bit, being a righty.
Yeah, Abreu in a platoon role, I believe, the last 2 years hit like 20 plus home runs. And the interesting thing, there's another article that came out that basically said the Red Sox are working on trying to make him a better hitter against lefties, right? So, you know, to your point, Terry, as far as picking back on the whole idea of like Duran and being somewhat expendable in these potential trades, another interesting thing that was reported is Arizona Diamondback star outfielder Corbin Carroll broke his hammy bone in his right hand and is undergoing surgery today. So what if we're not high on Marcelo Meyer, or we're just hoping to just keep him for 5 to 6 years and hope it pans out, what if you packaged him and Jaron Duran for Kettle Marte, put him at second, slide our new guy over to third? How would you guys feel about a move like that?
Wait, who in Duran one more time?
Marcelo Meyer.
Oh, Meyer and Duran. Honestly, I would do it. I would absolutely do that.
How do you feel, Jeremy?
I'm not as down on Duran as everybody else. I think he provides a certain level of chaos to an offense that's not going to hit the ball out of the park and creates runs, by putting pressure on the defense. I like Duran. I especially like Duran at DH, which is where I think he's going to get a lot of at-bats this year. And I think he'll be a little bit more appreciated, not kind of flubbing a couple fly balls here and there. He's under a lot of scrutiny for some reason. And I know why, because he keeps doing stupid stuff on the field and swearing and getting suspended for a day for this and that. But so I don't know, Chris, it's a cop-out answer, but I'd want to sit down and look at the numbers a little bit more. I'm not ruling it out. And obviously we need that bat in the infield where we have a surplus in the outfield. So from that perspective, I probably lean, I'm okay with it.
So you made me think of something else interesting. Then if you would like to keep Duran as far as in, oh my God, why can't I think of it? Not playing in the field.
DH.
If you kept him as DH, if we were willing to really actually trade Marcelo Meyer, I would venture to guess there's other teams other than the Arizona Diamondbacks that wouldn't expect us to put him out there. That if we made it realistic, maybe you could package him and you get a team that maybe is looking to take on a young potential star, quote unquote. And if you could eat some of Yoshida's money and then offload him and open up that DH spot, I mean, that would be kind of good, right? You put Duran and even Abreu, one of them at DH, you keep the other one in the field, and it opens up a ton of flexibility.
The problem with moving Yoshida and this, and why I think he hasn't moved, is you're going to have to give more than one high-end prospect and maybe a big leaguer to just get rid of him. Like, there's no one out there looking for Masataka Yoshida. So, you know, I mean, I'm not necessarily comfortable with that. What I'm comfortable with is I don't care about John Henry's money, just DFA him.
That's what has to happen. He's got 2 years left. I'm boldly, I keep saying this and I'm going to say it all year long, I'm boldly assuming there won't be a 2027. So that would make it 1 year left. You have to move on from Yoshida because you use the Duran example. It doesn't really make a ton of sense to platoon him with Yoshida because they're both lefties who can't really hit lefties. So it just doesn't work. It's not a compatible platoon. And so, yeah, so DFA him because he's going to cost you games by jamming up your roster.
And not only is he duplicative from the perspective that he's a left-hand stick with similar lack of power numbers, the only thing he probably does better is put the ball in play. Duran is a dynamic offensive player when he's going. And like I said, he can be a difference maker. Yoshida's maybe at best a move the lineup type of guy. So, I mean, those at bats, if both of those players are on the roster, have to be Duran. So, I mean, unless there's an injury, Yoshida just does not fit the roster. And again, I can't say this enough. I would be furious if they gave away big league talent and prospects just to move that contract when you can get rid of them tomorrow by just DFAing them and eating the money.
I think at that point, you kind of have to really. You're going to need other guys in the game not named Yoshida. So it just.
And he's not a defensive replacement, and he's not going to go in and pinch run. He not only does he not offer you roster flexibility, he makes it significantly worse just by being there.
I'm pulling up Duran's numbers right now. I have them against left-handed pitching. Not spectacular. I mean, he's a .232 hitter with a .284 on base. But that's not an automatic out either. Like, I can live with that. Abreu can't hit at all against lefties. And I've said time and time again, and I'll say it for the rest of spring training, I don't believe for one second he's actually going to face lefties all year. So if he was going to play every day, he should have, what, 500 at-bats at least?
I think it's 600.
Well, I was being very conservative.
Yeah.
So,
okay. 500 plus.
Yeah. So I don't think there's any chance that's going to happen. I think they'll pull the plug, you know, at some point, probably late in the month of May at the latest. And he'll just go back to being a platoon guy, which is probably what he is at this point. And I can live with that. But Duran could play every day. He's not the same defensively as Abreu is. He's not going to, you know, pull an upset and win the gold glove for left fielders. But I just think you can do more with his bat, and he's adequate enough in the field. I think you win more games with Duran.
Yeah. You can put him in the field. If somebody goes down, you can put him in for 15 games. You can put him in center field and get away with it. Same with left field. I mean, he's not going to win a gold glove, but he offers some flexibility. You know, Yoshida offers no flexibility. And I'm going to tell you right now, I'm going to run out of patience really quick with the pro-Yoshida propaganda coming out of Alex Cora's mouth. Like, don't tell me what he's going to be. This is the same thing we dealt with Cassis for 2.5 years. I see the numbers. I see what he does. I see the body of work. I don't need to be told he's going to be a 280, 2080 guy. Like, if he is, great, but stop. Just it's Red Sox lying, and maybe they're just trying to prop him up and get the most out of him because they know Henry's never going to authorize eating the money. But it's nonsensical, and I don't buy it. And I'm already sick and tired of hearing about it.
And then what do you do when Costas comes back? He's probably got to be the DH.
Well, he rakes in Worcester. You get his value to something, and you just move on from him.
That's what I would do. Yeah.
Yeah,
but, I mean, he has no value right now. He has nothing. You can't move him. So
I was going to say,
if you go down to Worcester and in the first 2 months hit 15 bombs, then some team's dumb enough to take a shot at him that they're going to get the back end of 2023 out of him again.
Yeah, because, I mean, people were interested in Costas. I think it was the reason why we never traded him to the Mariners, because we were trying to unload Yoshida, just like I was trying to do 10 minutes ago. But, I think what just drives me absolutely nuts with this team is, you know, out of anyone realistically that could really elevate and take that next jump, to being that 30 home run guy. It's obviously Abreu. I just don't have the confidence that he's going to play every day and be able to get to that point. And it's like, he's our ticket realistically to getting that power that we kind of covet and need at this point. And then you have players like Mayer where it's like, what are we going to do with him? And then we got Christian Campbell. He's never going to play. He's blocked by like five players on this roster. And these are just diminishing and wasted assets that are either never going to be realized or we're going to hold on to too long. And it's going to be like the Costa situation where either via injury or just piss poor play, they're not going to be worth anything. And it's like, you could trade Marcelo Meyer and Christian Campbell today in a package and get yourself a superstar player or close to it that could provide serious power to this lineup. But we're reluctant to because, oh, well, they got a future. They're cheap. They're this. But they're never going to play. So it's just, it makes no sense to me.
Well, Campbell's still really young, and he also has very little value right now. So whether it's in Worcester or wherever, he's got to go back to being a projected big league player. He has no chance of making the team. And he's the same situation as Cassis, except Cassis is like 4 or 5 years older.
The thing with, I don't disagree with what you're saying. The thing I would say, though, with Christian Campbell is if you have a team that saw value in him prior and thinks that they could somewhat fix what we screwed up, because his contract is so damn reasonable and you have him for such a long period of time, there's an added value there versus Casas that exists with him because he's controllable, he's young, and you're going to have him for almost a decade. So if you have a team out there that sees the potential and thinks, all right, well, the Sox just kind of screwed him up, he can come here and he doesn't need to be the guy, I think there's a little bit more value.
I respectfully disagree. I think he has no value. I think the way they managed that beginning of last year, the constant position changes, he's fallen off completely with regards to the projection he was on before he signed the contract. I don't think he has any value. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, because Cassis has no value, and both could have value. They're just going to have to, in their each individual case, they're going to have to rake in Worcester.
Johnny was pointing out this morning in the war room. He would just woke up. I hadn't been to bed yet. I was still up at 6 a.m. But he was talking about Driveline, and Driveline's kind of been a controversial thing with the Red Sox. You know, some of the fan base, I haven't done deep dives on it, but some of the fan base thinks that they actually ruin players. Christian Campbell was a big Driveline guy. So is Tristan Casas. And we've seen how streaky Casas can be when he's healthy. You know, that whole first half of 2023, he was just ass. And, you know, and then Campbell destroyed in the minors and then hit for a month up here until the pitchers got ahead of him. And, you know, we haven't really seen him since. So I'm just wondering if they're putting too much stock in that. You know, I prefer just an old school approach. It's like that line in Moneyball. Nobody reinvents baseball. You know, everything's a trend until opposing pitchers figure it out. And then you're cooked, and then your offense has to pivot to something else.
Well, you're actually wrong, Terry. The Dodgers reinvented baseball with deferrals, but other than that, I would agree.
Look how proud he is of himself coming up with that.
Terry's like that's
Terry was sitting there thinking, he's like, yeah, kind of maybe.
I'm not an attorney like one of us is, but you know, I'm trying to rebut that. And, you know, that's like an off the field thing. Like they've reinvented roster building, but, you know, I don't think they have.
Well, technically, Chris, deferred money was years ago. And the famous instance, as we know, is Bobby Bonilla Jr. That was the first real instance of a team deferring money and getting absolutely boned by it.
Yeah, no. I know it existed, but doing it with literally every single player you have on your team for the foreseeable 50 years has never been done until the Dodgers.
Sticking with it, huh, Chris? Okay.
Oh, I'm dying on this hill.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's just go ahead and wrap. We're almost 45 minutes in. So first week of spring training. We'll probably be back on Sunday. Hopefully we don't get any serious injury news, especially with our pitching staff. But
Jesus, don't say that.
Yeah, I think we're kind of, you know, more fortunate than so many other teams. Tommy John season has started. A number of pitchers have gone on the 60-day on other teams. Spencer Schwellenbach was one of them, who I've been super high on. The other names escape me, but a number of guys already on there. So we'll be back probably Sunday night to discuss more of what's been going on. If any developments happen, any nuggets from Breslow, Cora, we'll be right on top of it. So everyone have a good rest of your week. Take care.